In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah. Let's all go to the
You're darn
lobby.
Tootin'. Time to find out what's happening at the movies. Alan Adams joining us right here in studio. How do you like darkness at 4:30?
Some bullcrap is what it is. I'm sitting in my office. It's like 3:30, and I'm like, why is it so dim in here? And I look, because I have this little, I have just a little lamp that I've been using for light, which has been perfectly serviceable up until this point. And then it's like, oh, right. Because it's dark, and so I have the 6 month cold bleak slog ahead of me. So and I've got overhead lights, but they're fluorescents, and I'm just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But
I don't want to change the time at all. I mean, I like this one better than the spring thing we do, but I don't like either one. Let's just pick one and stick with
That's
it.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, I think we just need to make the choice. Whichever one it is, I'm usually going to err on more light at the end of the day rather than the beginning of the day. But as long as I don't have to switch from one to the other, I'll take it. It'll be fine. It is dark and I don't care for it, Rich. I don't care for it at all.
I hear you. And dogs who shouldn't be bothered by it. And yet Ginger seemed a little confused this morning. She slept in a little longer than usual and then seemed mystified that it was so light when she came downstairs.
Yeah, they're not quite sure. They're not quite sure what's different, but they know something is different.
Right.
I think they follow our leads in a lot of that way. So it's, Stella was kind of the same way. Like she got up, she was a little restless in the middle of the night and then kind of crashed out. To an extent, she usually gets up and makes her feelings known about breakfast time, and she did not do that this morning because she was still a little sleepy and not really sure what was going on.
And as if that were not enough, then we get 3 days of 70s, and now we're going to throw a high of 49 at you for tomorrow.
Like it's so funny. And don't get me wrong, as long as I can sort of compartmentalize the existential dread that comes with a 70 degree November weekend, it was great. Like I got out and played around a disc golf on Saturday. Like I spent the whole weekend in shorts. Like it was great. That's a quick pivot.
Yes.
I'm not 25 degree swing. You expect that sort of thing in March. You don't necessarily, you're not ready for it in November. Yeah. So it's just like, But at least the temperatures are going to return to normal for a couple of days. And then, apparently we're going to be up in the mid 60s again.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah.
But everything's fine.
My sinuses are already
declaring
war.
Like, it's just like the shift in temperatures, the shift in pressures. Yeah. Like, it's just like, there's a lot of stuff going on inside my head.
Well, let's talk movies then. That'll make us happy.
Yeah, let's do that.
You got a couple that you'd like to talk about today, and I'm curious to hear about both of them.
Okay. Well, let's start with the one that we're not gonna spend a whole lot of time on. On Netflix, currently streaming, they released this past weekend Enola Holmes 2, a sequel to the Enola Holmes movie that they released back in the fall of 2020, which... I was surprised by how good it was. Like, I really enjoyed that first movie quite a bit.
Millie Bobby Brown, right?
Yeah, Millie Bobby Brown playing the titular Enola Holmes. Enola Holmes being the much younger sister of famed fictional detective Sherlock Holmes, who's played in these movies by Henry Cavill, who is a phenomenal Sherlock Holmes, just so everyone knows. The first movie, it was... nice, fast-paced sort of adventure movie, like sort of all ages appropriate, and pretty clever, pretty funny, and honestly, it's always nice to see these sorts of movies with a female protagonist. I think that's important for the entire viewing public. And so, obviously, this movie was going to get a sequel. Like, there's apparently a bunch of books. The woman who wrote them was named Nancy Springer. A series of YA novels revolving around this character, Enola Holmes. So I'm like, oh, of course, they're going to do a sequel. And they have. However, and this is interesting, this new movie does not is not an adaptation of any of the novels. It's just inspired by the characters and whatnot. Because they decided to go to a slightly different direction and incorporate some real historical events into this story. I'm not going to go into the specifics because I don't want to spoil anything. It revolved kind of a major plot reveal. I'm going to say this. You're going to know what I'm talking about, Rich. But yes, let's just say that we're in 1880s London, and it involves young ladies and a matchstick factory. But the basic gist of the story, Enola Holmes, it's following the events of the previous film. She's decided to, you know, open her own detective agency. But weirdly enough, in Victorian London, nobody wants to hire a girl detective. And so she struggles a little bit. She finally winds up getting a case, a young girl named Bessie. Her sister is missing, and she wants Enola's help to find her sister. And so Enola takes the case and starts investigating. Meanwhile, Sherlock, Henry Cavill, is working on a case of his own involving a series of financial crimes that are both very lucrative for the criminal committing them, and also perhaps the beginnings of a bit of a game being played with Mr. Holmes. Mm. So that's very interesting as well. And we watch as Enola sort of starts digging into this case and finding out that there's a lot more going on here than maybe meets the eye. So she starts, you know, finding herself in the company of powerful business people and political figures. Of course, her one-time beau and crush, Lord Tewkesbury, is also in the mix. Before long, the two cases, Enola's and Sherlock's, start to look like maybe they may have some connections. And we watch as the hole gets deeper, the web gets wider, and we just don't know. We don't know what's going to happen or who Enola can trust. And before long, what we thought we knew, we did not in fact know, except for the things that we did know.
Wow. All right.
It's a lot of fun. Like, it's very, very, very thoughtful. You know, the action sequences are pretty good. Stylistically, they make a lot of fun choices. There's a fourth wall breaking conceit that's consistent with the previous film. I think maybe we're going a little too far with the fourth wall breaking just in general, but I feel like these filmmakers have a handle on it. Like, it is used, but it is not overly used. There's nothing gratuitous about it. It just very much serves to invite us in to the character and to the world that's being created. So I think it works very nicely, and they're very thoughtful about how they use it, which I think is important. The performances are great. Millie Bobby Brown is an extremely talented young actress. I don't know. I honestly don't know how much longer she's. I think she might age out of this character, which will be too bad, because I think she's having a really great time playing the role. You know, sparkle in the eye, spring in the step, like absolutely perfect for this kind of role. Then you've got Henry Cavill, who, as I said, an excellent Sherlock. You know, very similar to other sort of cinematic Sherlocks, although, has a little bit more of a fragility, that's introduced, a little bit of warmth that I think comes from having, a younger sister involved, with all this. Got some great, turns from some supporting cast members. The wonderful David Thewlis plays the police superintendent, and he's really great.
Friend of downtown, David Thewlis.
That's right. Yeah. He's clearly having a very good time. And of course, Helena Bonham Carter shows up as their mom. She's only in a couple of scenes, but she's throwing 100 whenever she shows up. So that's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's not what you'd call great cinema, but honestly, like, for me to watch a sequel to a movie that I didn't expect to like, and they really did a good job as far as like advancing the character while still maintaining the connection to the stuff that I think worked the first time around. As far as sequels go, particularly Netflix sequels, like, this is a pretty good movie.
All right, let's talk about the one Carrie's already seen. I can't wait to see Weird. a biopic that could only be one about Al Yankovic.
Man, like, okay, so from the moment this was announced, I was like, okay, like, I'm ready. I don't know what for what. I don't know what I'm ready for, but I'm ready for it. Because Daniel Radcliffe playing Weird Al Yankovic is one of the most inspired casting decisions in recent memory. Just everything about it, from the Radcliffe announcement to the fact that it's Weird Al to the fact that it's on the Roku channel of all things, like that's such a, it's just such an odd combination of factors, which just makes it so perfect for a Weird Al biopic. And that doesn't even get into the fact that this is not the story that anyone was expecting.
Right.
It's so delightful. It's, I mean, when you take a step back, it obviously makes sense. It's like, oh yeah, you're going to do a biopic about Weird Al Yankovic. Obviously it's going to be a parody, like, because that just makes sense. Although I did see some social media reaction from some folks who were expecting a pretty straightforward biopic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my.
which I found very amusing.
Even better.
And but again, whether you knew what to expect, except you didn't, because holy cow, or you expected something different and got this parody, it didn't matter. Like even the people who were expecting to get something relatively straightforward and got this were obviously delighted, because that's why we love Weird Al, is because he's so weird. Like, and this movie is ridiculous and it's over the top and it's absurd and it's just, it hits all the beats of your conventional biopic, but hits them like Weird Al style. Like, it hits them with an accordion, you know? And so it's like, you know, we start, he's a kid, you know, he's hiding under the blankets to listen to comedy radio, because that's his thing. His mom catches him, is like, oh, you can't have your father better not catch you doing this. And we find out that he has a very strained relationship with his parents, particularly his dad, Nick, played by the wonderful Toby Huss. Every time I see Toby Huss in something, I'm like, oh, it's like 10% better because Toby Huss is here. Toby Huss is his dad, who poo-poos all of Al's dreams and tells him that he needs to go work at the nebulously defined factory. Like, it's never established what this factory does, what it makes. It's wildly dangerous, and people are maimed and killed on a regular basis, but we don't know what they make and stuff. Like, that's when you're like, oh, okay, we're gonna strap in here and let's see where this takes us. But young Al's life is changed one day when a door-to-door accordion salesman shows up.
Like they do.
His dad shows up, flies into a rage, I'm just gonna say a violent, violent rage. But when it's all said and done, mom is like, you know what, Al? You know what? We're gonna get you this accordion. The only condition is you can never play it in front of anyone ever. We skip ahead to high school, and that's when we first see. That's when we meet an older Al, a wiser Al. He's a good kid, gets good grades, kind of keeps to himself, a bit of an oddball, but well liked. And so some of his buddies are like, "Hey, you know, we're going to a party," and he's like, "Oh, my parents don't like me to go to parties." They're like, "Well, we'll just sneak out and come with us." And he's like, "Okay, I'll go to the party." And they show up, and wouldn't you know it, Rich, it's a polka party.
Oh, man.
They didn't tell him it was a polka party. and that's when we get our first glimpse of the prodigal accordion talent that is Weird Al Yankovic. Skip ahead. He's graduated. He's living in an apartment with three of his buddies. And they're just hanging out, talking about their dreams. And Al's dream is very simple. He wants to make up new words to already existing songs. That's his dream. and in a just magnificently handled eureka moment that involves sandwich making and the Knack, we get to see the birth of what would become Weird Al Yankovic. He writes his first parody song. He records it. It immediately becomes a massive hit, despite the misgivings of the Scotti brothers, record producers, played by Will Forte and the man himself, Weird Al.
Brilliant.
And from there he rockets to superstardom. He becomes a global superstar. The highest selling He has the biggest selling records in the history of the Billboard charts. He breaks the Beatles record for most top 10 singles at a single time. And is just rich and famous beyond his wildest dreams. So rich and so famous that he attracts, they've developed something that they call the Yankovic bump. And that is whenever he parodies one of your songs, it becomes that much more successful, which attracts the attention of an ambitious young pop star by the name of Madonna, played magnificently by Evan Rachel Wood. She is phenomenal in this movie. And Madonna makes her move on Weird Al, and they become a power couple of sorts. Although those around Al are questioning whether Madonna's good for him and whether she's got his best interests at heart. Suffice it to say, you find out. I'm not going to tell you what you find out, but you find out. There's the standard descent into substance abuse, drugs, et cetera, that has a payoff that is a wild surprise. That, again, I'm not going to spoil it because I feel like it was important to me in the moment to just, like, as stuff started unfolding. You ever have one of those movie-going experiences where you're just like, where you just find yourself exclaiming out loud, "What is happening?" Like, this is that kind of movie in a wonderful way.
Love it.
We'll stop there as far as the synopsis goes because I don't want to reveal too much about, particularly about the just madcap third act of this movie. But I laughed so much watching this movie, and I knew I would. Like, I mean, this is like if you. You know, I don't care how many circles you need to make the Venn diagram for this one. I'm square in the middle. It was obviously going to land for me. But I don't think I realized just how committed to the bit everyone was. Because Radcliffe crushes it. Like, he's so good in this movie. Not just because he's willing to lean into the weirdness, because I think we can all sort of acknowledge at this point that Daniel Radcliffe... is kind of this, has this weird sort of alpha nerd energy, I think we should all be grateful for the choices that he's been making post Harry Potter. But he's also a good enough actor where he can play it straight or straight enough in the moments where the comedy demands that he do that. And so it all meshes together, in this wonderful way. I mentioned Evan Rachel Wood. She's like she plays Madonna with this, there's this wonderful sort of bubblegumminess to her, but there's also this like undercurrent of malevolence that she never really overtly expresses, except for a couple of, again, very memorable moments. But it's always kind of present, and you're just like, and you stop and think about it, and it's like, you know, there is something a little sinister about Madonna, isn't there? And so you're watching that, and then of course there are the cameos.
Well, that's Carrie said it's just, you can't even recall them all. There are so many.
And that's the thing. And I made a deliberate choice in my review not to mention any of them because it's so much fun to like discover them on your own. But like, oh my God. And I haven't even mentioned Rainn Wilson as Dr. Demento, yeah, which is the role he was literally born to play. Like, he's so like, he's fantastic. And he's like, he's this kind of Svengali kind of figure, which, you know, the idea of Dr. Demento being some sort of Svengali is hilarious on its face. And then you have Rainn Wilson doing it. It's just, oh, it's so just chef's kiss. But yeah, just like, there's just like, hell, there's one party scene that is like, it basically brings together, everyone who was famous in like the late 70s, early 80s, being played by like a who's who of like comedy today, like just this wonderful sort of crossover thing, you know. And it's so you're watching and you're like, oh, is that? Wait, is that? Holy cow! What? You know. And it's, you know, it's like, oh my God, that's who they got to play Andy Warhol. Like, oh, Salvador Dali is here. Weird. Wolfman Jack. And just on and on and on and like all being played by these wonderfully iconic figures. I will say, just because he's sort of outside the realm of comedy and someone who has long had a sort of an online sort of bromance with Weird Al. Lin-Manuel Miranda is in this movie.
It's fantastic.
Just as a throwaway part. Like, he's got like three lines, I think, or something like that. But it's just like, of course he is, because he loves Weird Al and Weird Al loves him. Yeah. But just throughout, you just have this wonderful sort of chaos energy, because it's vanishingly rare to be watching a movie and be like, I really don't know what's going to happen. Like, you know, because like, this is not a movie that is beholden to the standard, you know, rules of narrative. Like, the beats are there. Like, it's like, it is like, if you zoom out, it is recognizable as a music biopic. But if you focus on any individual piece, it's like, I don't know what's happening. Nothing makes sense. I'm having a wonderful time. and that's kind of what it boils down to. Like, it's just like, sometimes, man, you just want to get weird. And you know who understands that better than anybody else? Weird Al Yankovic.
Can't wait to see it.
So good.
Awesome. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, talking movies and Pass the Popcorn.